Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Monday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well after another big weekend. Really interesting weekend in football, high school, college, and pro. We'd love to have you join in with us today. It's Bill and Dan. Brian Matthews should be on his way. He was checking in today. He knows we're in the studio, so B-Matt should be here shortly. So we're looking forward to getting his thoughts. We'll give you ours, and we'd love to get yours on the this past weekend since we talked to you on Friday.
Yeah, I thought it was a another fun game day weekend in Auburn and a really exciting Saturday of college football around the country, especially in the SEC. And you know, Hugh Freeze starts the press conference today. Like that, yeah. I mean, things aren't perfect, but you know, Hugh Freeze is glad to be 3-0 for the first time in a couple of years, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
And it's and feeling like you've got a pretty good team going to a quality opponent on Saturday in Oklahoma.
Really praising Oklahoma, saying when he looks at that team, he sees a team that appears to have the talent to be a playoff contender. They're number 11. Mm-hmm. In the latest AP poll, Auburn up to number 22, by the way. And yes, it's going to be a tough matchup, a tough challenge for the Tigers. But I don't think you've seen Auburn's best yet. I don't know that we've seen Oklahoma's best either. But both teams, I think, really looking forward to a big conference opener this weekend.
And Auburn avoiding the pothole and the bump in the road by taking care of business against a game South Alabama Jaguars team. It was not easy.
Yeah, I mean,
for
they
Auburn,
were
it was
yeah, no, they were they were pretty effective offensively, even though now, as Hugh Freeze said, look, you hold them to 15 points. You do that, you hold everybody to 15 points, you're going to win a lot of ball games. You're going to win most of them. You probably should win all of them. But, South Alabama, I mean, it was an odd game, Dan.
Here's how I would argue the Hugh Freeze point there. You're right. Holding a team to 15 points is going to equal victory most of the time from here on out for Auburn. I would counter that by saying most teams that play Auburn and have five different drives where they run 10 or more plays.
Five of their seven real possessions, they ran at least 10, and they had a 15-play drive, a couple of 12s.
And I want to be clear. I am excited about the potential of this Auburn team, and I think things are headed in the right direction. South Alabama exposed some things defensively, I think, that had you remembering some of Baylor's success through the air, some of last year's team's struggles on money downs, the way South Alabama converted a couple of third and longs.
Oh, they ended up, I think, when you include the fourth down attempts, I think they ended up 10 for 20.
Yeah.
I mean, on it was, third and fourth downs.
There were opportunities for the Auburn defense to not only create more big plays, although you did have some turnovers.
Auburn had two turnovers, and that was critical.
And they were
critical
massive,
that they had those turnovers.
Massive plays, but I think you also had opportunities as a defense to get off the field a couple of times. And South Alabama, had your number time and time again in that regard. Ultimately, you're right. Only 15 points, and Auburn leads by double figures for most of the game, right? They build that early 21-3 lead, and they're able to keep
offensively wasn't the problem. I mean, Auburn scored on four or five possessions in the first half.
Yep,
and scored on their first possession of the second half. So they scored on five of their first six possessions.
Yeah,
I really felt like they sort of throttled back after that.
The second time Auburn gets the ball in the second half, there are about 10.5 minutes to go in the game.
Yeah.
I mean, there are three long drives, and South Alabama probably, I think, considering they were down two scores, you know, maybe South Alabama needed a little more urgency on that.
Was that a turnover? That
was the drive that ends with the Jared Smith.
Jared Smith sack fumble.
The strip sack, yeah. Uh-huh. And that's with...
Because, I mean, South had driven and was moving, looking like they were going to could cut it to, you know, a one-score game.
That's third and nine at the Auburn 18.
Right.
Down 16 when Auburn gets that strip sack.
Yeah, they score and go for two. I mean, they're down eight.
You're right. I mean, South Alabama could have kept that. You know, it could have been a one-possession game in the fourth quarter. Instead, Auburn's defense makes one of its biggest plays of the year right there, and it's Jared Smith who...
You asked a question, and he's one of the guys. When I'd asked a question about freshmen, I expected him to say, you know, he mentioned quite a few guys. He mentioned mostly secondary when I was asking about, you know, freshmen pushing for even more playing time. And Jared Smith's definitely one of those. Now, he may get a lot more just because right now the biggest injury concern as far as this week is Amaris Williams.
Do you want to start with sort of pass defense when you're breaking down the South Alabama game? Because I know there are there are some bright spots you can look at. But, no, I think people are wondering about the safety play. I think Sylvester Smith has been up and down this season. I think there have been
nickel and safeties have been spotty at best.
Right, and it's not – I don't think it's – I mean, you will get Champ Anthony back most likely on Saturday, and you could really use – tell you what, Champ at full strength playing a lot of snaps could make a difference here. You know, Auburn's had experience. Robinson and Harris have been the guys that have been out there a lot. They've sort of integrated the new safeties.
Right.
New boy
played his most, I think he played 29 or 30 snaps on Saturday.
Right. Winters was out there.
Eric Winters is pushing for a lot of playing time.
Yeah. So I wonder if that's something where there's something of a shift this week when they review the tape of the, they review the tape against, South Alabama and for that matter, Baylor and make a decision about who needs to be out there. But, that's an area that Oklahoma seems destined to attack.
Everybody will. I mean, one thing that has been a lot of trouble for Auburn is covering the slot this year. And I'm sure John Mateer and Oklahoma will want to attack Auburn right there and see how the Tigers can respond if they can.
Champ Anthony did a lot of that last year. They've moved him to safety and gone with Sylvester Smith as the primary guy at that position through the first three games. Like we said, he's been up and down.
Yep.
They've used Newboy. They've used KLF, who got that penalty in the fourth quarter. A lot of folks didn't like the pass interference on KLF in the
I've seen a whole lot worse.
Fourth down.
I've seen worse not called.
Yeah, that's one where I guess by the book, you know, you can't get too mad because it probably is, but it's also when you see such physical play downfield and you see something kind of questionable deciding a big play like a fourth down, you hate to think that's it's like if you're going 36 and a 35, right? You are speeding.
True.
But you're seeing, you know, you're
seeing other cars pass you at 45, right?
Yeah, and I don't know. For the most part, I wasn't all that angry about the officiating from
Saturday. There.
I did think that there was one of the maybe the strangest penalty of the year to start the game.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't guess it was a penalty. I guess it was just a rule where your deep man on the kickoff return signals a fair catch, and a guy in front comes over and then catches the ball and took a couple of steps. And the officials, you know, everybody, and I watched the replay last night, nobody knew what was going on. I mean, expected the ball to be at the 25. The next thing you know, it's first down at the 8.
It's definitely a penalty. I know because I've seen it. It's definitely a penalty if you call for a
fair catch and run,
and then try to advance it as though you didn't.
But usually, even if you call for a fair catch and take a couple of steps, they're not going to call the penalty. But I don't know that I've ever seen one player call for a fair catch and another player run over and swoop in. Catch it.
Yeah, that's a new one.
Swoop in and grab it.
I believe it was Omar.
It was Omar
who came over and caught it after Bryce Kane had signaled for the fair catch.
That's exactly right. So a couple of things to iron out.
But then Auburn goes on a 12-play, 92-yard drive.
Yeah.
Offense wasn't a problem. I mean, sure, fans want to see more explosive plays, but
I want to see more explosive plays.
But I will take a, you know, Five out of your first six possessions result in scores, including four of your first five resulting in touchdowns. I don't care how many plays they take if they do that. That's the voice of Brian Matthews. We told you he'd be here in just a few minutes. B-Man, how's it going?
It's good. It's good. Busy afternoon for me. You got the U-Freeze press conference.
Y'all do your podcast.
Yep. Had to crank out a quick story, then the podcast, and now I'm here for the next 2 hours. So looking forward
to it. Good deal. We started off, obviously talking a little bit about the game, looking back at it, Hugh Freeze, pointing out that Auburn only gave up 15. But it was an odd game in that neither team could get the other one off the field. I mean, long possessions. Yeah. Five of South Alabama's possessions, where they had the ball for at least 10 plays, as many as 15 on one. And that's the reason Auburn only had seven possessions in the game, really, until they got the ball to Neal on it at the end.
Yeah, I think South Alabama's drive at the end of the first half and the start of the second half really kept Auburn from having the potential or probably blowing them out, and everybody feeling a little bit better about that game and the way Auburn's playing.
Yeah, I mean, well, you look at it still, it was 28-9 at the half. And, you're thinking, all right, Auburn's on their way to a 50-point game. And then they score a field goal in the second half. But part of it was because South Alabama had the ball for so long. Exactly. Auburn could not get them off.
We were in the press box. We were saying during that first South Alabama drive of the second half, it's like South Alabama's played pretty well, and yet if they turn it over here or they come up empty on this drive and Auburn goes back and scores, it's going to be 35-9 midway through the third quarter. Potentially, instead, South Alabama scores and sort of puts pressure on Auburn to, I think, both chew the clock and score on that 6-plus minute drive that ends in the field goal for Auburn in the second half. But no, I mean, to Brian's point about wanting to see more explosive offense, like I totally understand. I also would consider that we really haven't seen this offense in letter rip mode since Baylor. Like, I would say, I think there have been two games where you have deliberately throttled back on how much Jackson runs and how much of that, especially, think about the night of the Baylor game, right? Like, what you saw then versus these two games, I think it's a deliberate, let's limit Jackson's exposure in games we think we can win other ways. I'm not sure they can win the Oklahoma game other ways.
No, I think you need Auburn's going to need everything at their disposal to. This is a really good Oklahoma defense.
Yeah, like if I had to guess, like I would think Jackson's probably going over 15 rush attempts on Saturday. Like I think Auburn. I think it's.
How many of those are because of the pass rush.
Sure, but
the pressure by Oklahoma.
I think a lot of them could be called runs. You know what I mean? Like they were against Baylor. Like I think Auburn could be trying to like that. That seems to be a weapon Auburn has not leaned on nearly as much in these two games, and was such a huge part of the Baylor game that I would remember that this week because I think how Jackson runs is going to be a big factor in can Auburn establish a run like they did against Baylor, and if so, how much of it is going to be on Jackson Arnold advancing the ball himself?
I think that's the biggest factor for Auburn offensively because they're not doing a lot of other things besides running the ball, and they need to have a quarterback doing that to keep the defense off balance because right now their passing offense doesn't really extend past 10 yards very often.
No, it hasn't. I mean, they haven't attempted many past 10 yards. What's strange, though, is I was talking with Doug Amos a little earlier today, and he said, it just looks like Jackson Arnold doesn't have the arm to do that. It's like, no, if you at practice, you've seen Jackson Arnold has the arm to get the ball than 20, 15 yards downfield. But Auburn hasn't done it. They just haven't attempted it.
So maybe there's some sandbagging going on.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But if you're Oklahoma right now and you're a fan and you're looking at some of these numbers, Oklahoma is one of the best defenses in the country defending passes of 10 or more or 20 more yards. Auburn's one of the worst. Oklahoma is one of the best at producing these big gains in the passing game. Auburn is one of the worst defenses.
Yeah, Auburn's given up some chunks.
I mean, if that holds in this game, it's going to get ugly.
That's true. That's true. So but that needs again, to change. Again, yeah. You know, you still have to look at competition.
Yeah.
Michigan's a good team. I don't think Michigan's a great team.
No, they don't have good receivers and their quarterback's fresh.
And then the other two games that Oklahoma played, they should have put up numbers like that.
So it is a small sample size and it is competition. There's a lot of other factors too.
To that point, I think there are a lot of teams where we're going to be talking more about the sample size
in
a couple of weeks, right? Like it's there's some really interesting things. And that's not to discount anything. Like, there have been some big wins already. There have been some big losses already around college football this early in the season. But I think for a lot of teams, like, you could be talking about absolutes right now, and 3 weeks from now throwing them in the garbage.
Yeah, you're almost a 180. Yeah, that's right.
There's no team I can point to that and say 100% they're playing for a national championship. And I think a lot of years you could say that.
Yeah, I think so. I think Georgia made a pretty good statement.
They did.
They made a pretty good statement on Saturday. Yeah. The questions, you know, I mean, because the things everybody that we heard, sort of like some of the stuff you're hearing from Auburn. Can they throw the ball downfield? Yeah. How's Gunnar Stockton going to do in his first in his first road start? Pretty good.
Yeah, and it wasn't just – I mean, the receivers were a problem last year, too. It wasn't just Stockton. It was that passing offense in general. There were questions. But and Gunnar Stockton came up big.
How about the fourth down?
That's the throw of the year so far in college football.
Tennessee had their top two cornerbacks out in that game, too, right? Two starting cornerbacks out in that game?
Yeah, they had one. I think one was injured before the game and one got injured early in the game. But, no, the touchdown – the touchdown with the game on the line.
No kidding.
The fourth down throw is just, and you know what, when Tennessee got the ball back after the strip sack, right, when they're up eight and they do nothing on that drive, doesn't it feel like
I told you I picked Tennessee early in the week, and on Friday I said, just doesn't feel right.
No way.
This is Georgia. This is Kirby. This is
nine in a row. I was like that too. Same with Georgia Tech Clemson. I kept flipping back and forth. I finally settled on Georgia Tech just in time. So.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, Clemson has not been Clemson for the last couple of years, and they're not.
No,
they're not.
But Georgia. That throw to keep the game to set up the 2-point conversion and then in overtime
and then Tennessee misses the chip shot. They got jumps to blow the 38 yarder. They missed the chip shot. It's like you're toast.
They are what Alabama was under Nick Saban for a long time and could still be. We'll see. Don't go crazy. But I will say, like, they are the team.
Hey,
where you and Pete Carroll's USC teams had this too, where it's like you think they're beat.
Yeah,
and you want to celebrate early, right? You want to pump your fist out.
You never celebrate until it is over.
They're never going to get out of this one.
Yeah,
and right.
When they were down 21-7, and I mean, you look up and
you were getting text messages.
I am. My phone's blowing up.
You're getting text messages about how bad Georgia looks, right?
Yeah, Aguilar. I'm getting. No, it's great. Georgia sucks. I mean, Aguilar starts 14 for 14 for 220 something yards. From that point on. What did he go? Like it was well under 50% for like two-thirds as many yards for the rest of the game.
It's not a no-hitter until the game's over.
Right? I mean, I mean, well, you know, and people go, but Georgia wasn't that good. They won the SEC title last year. I mean, it's like, they're still there. But you're right, Brian. There are a lot of teams that right now people think, wow, this looks like a championship team. We'll wait and see after they play some folks.
Yeah.
But when you win a big game on the road,
it's big.
That shows something.
I just think the SEC, unlike previous, couple of decades, I just don't think there's a super team in this league. I think there's 5, 6, or 7 teams that could win the league, that could get in the playoffs, that could eventually win a national championship.
I think Hugh Freeze is right. He's absolutely right. This is a deep league.
It is.
I mean, there are an awful lot of teams that can beat other teams.
Yes.
I mean, I'd say you go down at least 10 deep where any of those teams could beat any of the other teams.
I agree. Yep. And I think there'll be some other teams outside of that top 10 that are going to probably pull some upsets here too.
Oh yeah, so. Well, I mean, you see it in 1 week where South Carolina goes from number 10 to out of the top 25.
Yeah.
We call that one. Now, I mean, obviously, Lenore Sellers going down with an injury was huge, but I mean, we hadn't seen anything from South Carolina other than Lenore Sellers this year, and Vandy already felt like they were controlling the ball game when Sellers went down.
I've overreacted in the past, and by the way, it looks like Sellers isn't playing because Missouri's a 14-point favorite this week.
I think Missouri drums them if they don't have Sellers. I don't think they've got a chance.
That line opened at 3, and now that people are pretty sure you're not seeing Sellers, it's Missouri and it's 14. So
Missouri looks pretty good.
Yeah, Missouri. Going to Missouri is going to be a tough draw for a couple of teams in the next couple of weeks. They come to Auburn as well. But that's you're right, and I think overreacting to South Carolina would be, hey, that Virginia Tech job's open, and a guy named Beamer could be a conquering hero. And
Virginia Tech has just been terrible.
If it goes the way it could at South Carolina, there could be a lot of South Carolina people
saying, "Go ahead and go back. Go back to your dad's school."
Yeah, they'll call John Sumrall, or they'll call Golish at South Florida, or they'll call Jamie Chadwell, who used to be at Coastal and he's at Liberty now. Like this is how quickly things can turn in the SEC, and they have turned at South Carolina.
Hey, you're not kidding. All right, we need to get to our first break of the afternoon. Just underway, Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Drew at the controls here on the Monday Drive.
The Drive, Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. And let's get to The Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And in case you lost it somewhere, 334-321-1390. Jeremy is up first. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, guys. I'm sure you've already talked about it. I'm just now kind of tuning in. I think fairly even performance the past two weekends. Disappointed in the sluggishness of the defense. I felt like they came out sluggish. The next couple of series, they really seemed to fly around and kind of slow South Alabama down. But then they just, it's almost like they turned the switch back off.
There was only 1-3 and out for South Alabama in the whole game. And they only the other possessions that were under 10 plays, Auburn was able to get turnovers. But they really, they didn't force punts at all from South.
It's been coming from the slot. It was coming from the outside receivers a little bit more.
They ran the ball better than anybody has against Auburn.
Look, and credit to South, they came to play. But Auburn's going to face considerably better offenses these next couple of weeks than South Alabama. And that's
I will say this, like, that South Alabama bunch was bigger than most schools we would call their size, I guess. Like, that was a big, strong football team. I was surprised at that. And maybe it caught our guys by surprise. I don't know. Because if you've got in your mind you're playing some smaller guys, like you show up and play differently than you normally would.
Yeah, and it's still hard. We talked about it with Coach Freeze last week. It's still hard to convince 18, 19-year-olds that a team you're a 25-point favorite over is going to play you tough when you've got a trip to Oklahoma next week.
Right. Next question. The guy handling the kickoffs?
Connor Gibbs?
Yes. Why has he not, like, how was there a competition to see who would kick the ball off? Like, I don't think there's been anything wrong with Towns kicking the ball off. But what that guy did Saturday kicking the ball was entirely different than, like, that ball was 100 feet in the air and 9 yards deep.
He gets tremendous hang. Yeah, he's got a tremendously strong leg.
Our understanding is that he's made some progress on that even since arriving at Auburn. He wasn't necessarily that as a kickoff guy.
He was pretty good.
He was good at Southern Miss. But Towns, I did wonder with some of the kickoffs, like, we wondered if there was strategy involved, if Towns is necessarily being told, hey, kick it out of the back of the end zone, or kick him higher and kick him shorter.
Well, I'd rather
and see
kick
if
him out of the back of the end zone.
You're right. I mean, Gibbs has just been
The field goal thing is an entirely different question.
Yeah.
Yeah, the field goal thing is an entirely different. question.
Yeah.
We haven't seen him get field goals, so we just don't know. But I just, like, when you watch him kick off, I don't understand how there was ever a competition to see who would be the kickoff guy.
Yeah, maybe just because he was the latest guy in there and they knew what they had in towns. I don't know. But yeah, you're right. I don't see him giving that up unless he gets hurt.
No. Yeah. Because seriously, like that, we haven't, I don't even know if Anders Carlson kicked the ball like that. Like the very first kickoff, it left his leg and I just went, oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Because like I said, it was as high as the bottom of the upper deck. And 9 yards deep,
he delivered those kind of kicks against Ball State after the Towns injury. Like I mean, we were talking about it in the press box a little bit mid game. It's like this guy is like these are going higher and further than the ones that Towns was offering.
Yeah, I don't know. Hey, look. We got the ball with 5.5 minutes to go in the first half and took the entire half and went down the field and scored. I don't know if I was ever so tickled about anything in all my life. Just to manage the clock, milk it down, and, like, you know, what most teams would call a 4-minute drive, we stretched it into almost 5 full minutes. Mm-hmm. But that was impressive. To manage the clock, grind out those first downs, and end the half with a touchdown the way we did. Like, that's the kind of football that you're going to need the rest of the season.
Jeremy, I don't want to speak in absolutes about this team because you're right. The sample size is small. We'll learn a lot more about everybody. I'm pretty sure that Auburn is a considerably better short yardage team offensively.
I'm absolutely sure they are.
Because
of Jackson Arnold.
Ever under Freeze and maybe, you know, in a while. Because, yeah, I think because of Jackson Arnold, because of this offensive line, which has had several good games against the run or, you know, blocking for the run this season. I think the other guys certainly helped. You know, Jeremiah Cobb is a useful weapon in short yardage because of his burst. You think you're getting Damari back on Saturday. No, I just the tush push is controversial. Philly used it a lot yesterday. You know, people are talking about it some more. I'd be fine with banning it. It's legal, and as long as it's legal, Auburn running it with Frazier behind Jackson Arnold pushing him forward or Tate behind Jackson pushing him forward is going to be a tough short yardage play to stop.
I'll tell you something. This is interesting. When I walked in over at the Performance Center today, I'm walking in, it's sort of dark, and I didn't notice there was a voice to my right just spoke to me, and I said, hey, and I turned and I saw it was Joe Witt.
Yeah.
And so I sat down and was talking with him for a few minutes, and he just brought up, and we were talking about defenses and things like that, but he said, I'm really impressed with Auburn's quarterback. I'm really impressed with Jackson Arnold's ability. He said, to run the ball. He said, he is, not only is he tough and making the right reads, he said, but he's got the ability, the vision to run in traffic better than most quarterbacks you see. And he really does. From our vantage point, watching it from the end zone, it's amazing when he takes off up the middle and you think, all right, he's going to get 5. Mm-hmm. And then he makes a couple of guys miss and gets another 5 or 10 yards.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said, his decision making with the ball has been really good, and as tough is the word I would use. Like he's not scared.
No, but he knows how to go down and avoid the big hit.
He does. Yeah, he's like I said, he plays the position of quarterback as well as we've had since Still. And that's just as far as I'm concerned. Like when I watch him play, he's the best. Like just quarterback position. Every decision seems to be about the right decision.
Okay, Jeremy, there are folks who would point out that Jared Stidham is now Bo Nix's backup in Denver, and Bo is. I mean, I agree. Bo played his best football.
I did not watch Bo Nix in person at Oregon. That's kind of where I'm. Like, I'm just saying, while he was at Auburn.
No, that's, you know what, I'm not going to disagree too much because Bo, you could argue Bo's best year at Auburn was
his freshman.
I mean, and statistically maybe his sophomore year, But Stidham as a you're right. It's Stidham's 17. If you want to say the best year by an Auburn quarterback, you know since Stidham 17, I'm not going to put up too much of a fight there. And yeah. and you're right. No, Jackson does some things. When it comes to diagnosing and knowing when to. How about this? Is it awareness?
Stidham just never seemed to put you in a bad spot. Like you are always on track and on pace with your offense, and I feel like that's where we are right now.
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
And I would say it's more in 17 with Kerryon was probably the truth there with Stidham. Like maybe if that happened, it happened more in 18 when things were sort of breaking down around him. But I think with Jackson, awareness, right? Knowing when to bail out, knowing when to dump off, knowing when to gamble. That's been, I think, a really pleasant surprise through three games for a guy who had a spotty record of that at Oklahoma when he played. And yeah, really want to see how Jackson's decision making and awareness are tested this Saturday.
Because this is going to be different this weekend than anything else.
Oh yeah, there's no question about it.
You can almost we have had 3 weeks of good practice on offense to get ready for this. This is an entirely different level of football.
And I would say practice on both sides of the ball, right? To get ready for this, because I think Baylor's a very good offense. Slight favorite.
Yeah, they are. They're not a very good defense, but they're a very good offense.
Slight favorite at home against Arizona State, this weekend. Like I think Baylor's a very good offense. I think Oklahoma is.
I don't think Oklahoma's offense is as good as Baylor's.
That's interesting. Yeah. I
don't know who they played.
That's Michigan would be the, and we're going to find out.
Oklahoma's offense is more physical than Baylor's.
Hmm. Yeah, I definitely could buy that.
And I think Auburn, when Auburn played Baylor, I don't know if you saw the full allotment of Baylor's offense because of the injury to Sawyer, right? Like I think some of Baylor's running game was going to be quarterback driven, and that when he's limping around for the whole, but for three quarters, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, Mateer gives you a serious other threat.
That's no something. Question. I mean,
he's their best running threat right now.
I mean, quarterback running is going to be such a big part of the game on Saturday, Jeremy.
Yeah, absolutely. Bye, guys.
Appreciate it, Jeremy. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in 334-321-1390 as we continue with the Monday Drive.
Part of the Drive. Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Drive. 20 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. So, Brian, what were your thoughts after the ball game? I mean, it was a solid. I think Hugh Freeze has used that a lot. It was a solid win.
I agree with Freeze. He talked about maybe the lack of effort or the just lack of just getting after it on defense.
Yeah, it didn't really feel like it was. Yeah, there was that we're just talking a couple of words, spark, something like that.
Fireworks.
Yeah.
And they couldn't get off the field.
They didn't play like Banshees.
Those two big drives, I thought, was certainly noticeable to me.
One of my concerns, obviously, and it sounded much more positive today, Auburn had so many guys banged up.
They did.
I mean, we saw it when Amaris Williams went for the tackle and his arm got bent backwards. And I thought immediately, I told Dan, I said, that's shoulder.
Yep.
That's shoulder.
And Freeze said after the game that it popped out and right back in. Mm-hmm. He said today when asked about injuries, he thought that Amaris was the only one.
And that's something, people
good.
Go, oh, well, if it popped back in, oh, come on.
Yeah.
You ever have that happen to you? Let's see if you want to play football the next week.
And when it popped out, things may have torn.
Oh.
Like it's tough to tell. Until
once it does that, sometimes it's much more likely to do that again, too.
That's trouble, and that's a bummer for a guy who has seemingly done everything the right way.
Mm-hmm. And boy, and
was, for 9 months,
and such a big improvement from last year to this year, and he is a big factor up front.
Asked Hugh Freeze about what to do without him, and first name that he mentioned was Jared Smith.
He did.
He's making a big push.
Yeah. He looks like the type of player that's going to keep making plays. Not every time, but he's going to make a play.
He's
and get
so
better,
long,
better.
And it seems like he's always in the backfield.
Yeah, got great upside, and I just He's already a good player, but Buddy, you give him a year, you know, in the strength and conditioning program, he is going to be a beast by this time next year.
I said it before you walked in, Brian, that maybe, I mean, maybe the defensive play of the season is the Jared Smith sack to sort of extend that, you know, to protect that lead. Because if South Alabama, you know, down 15, you know, if they make a play to, you know,
they're down 16. So if they score and go for two, they're one score down in the ball game.
It's a two score game. I mean, it's something they can. It's still within reach until Jared Smith makes that sack, and that'd be for Auburn to not have a Mars. Now it sounds like Eric Singleton.
Yeah, you hope, because I mean that again looked fairly like that could be a hit pointer, and that's what Hugh Freeze said it was after the game.
Yeah, I don't know how much the TV broadcast emphasized. It was a really ugly landing for Eric on that throw to the end zone. So it's hopefully he's okay. The fact that, you know, he's Hugh Freeze called it a hit pointer in the postgame press conference seemed to indicate that they're going to lean on Eric pretty heavily this Saturday, so I would think it's a matter of him taking it easy the next couple of days and being as healthy as possible and getting out there. And maybe in a tighter game, Eric might have even – because we saw him testing it out on the sideline. It's like maybe in a tighter game he would have gone out there more. Something you saw on Saturday that I think is going to be a big part moving forward, and Eric Singleton, and if Malcolm can bounce back and be a bigger part of the offense – it sounds like that was also pretty precautionary, keeping him out. The sweeps and the pop passes with some of Auburn's slot receiver options, you know, if you can get the quarterback.
It's really tough to defend that. I mean,
Auburn has true speed from
the
those guys.
The defensive end, if he comes in, Jackson's going to keep it. If he doesn't, Jackson, you know, can give the ball to Eric. I mean, That's going to be a tough play.
I mean, there were times when it felt like South Alabama defended it well,
yeah,
and Eric Singleton would get 4 or 5 yards. And it's like, that's something. Granted, the athleticism of opposing defense is going to go up. But keep in mind, Auburn's also not really running it with every option available.
Right.
Because you don't want Jackson to run 20 times against South Alabama a week before the Oklahoma game.
Well, when you look at this offense, you've got that speed to the outside. You've got Jackson who can run it or hand the ball off, so you've got that option, and it's a quality option. It's not just him. He's not pretty good. He's dangerous.
Yeah, he is.
And if they could just stretch the field vertically, this offense could be really, really scary to opposing defenses and really explosive. That's just the one part that's not quite there yet.
Yeah, now part of it has to do with defenses playing back a little bit and giving Auburn, you know, if a team wants to give you 5 or 6 yards on every play, it might be tough. It might, you know, test your patience to do that, but it's surely not bad if you do that. But yeah, you'd love it. And I've got to feel like Oklahoma's going to play it a little tighter. They're going to play it a little tighter, and they feel like they can cover those guys back there. We'll see. I don't think Oklahoma has not faced receivers like Auburn has yet.
Oh, no, they haven't. You know, I think Auburn's receivers are talented. I don't think they're not performing or not getting the big plays and big catches because they're not talented. I just think it's a function of the way the offense is playing right now, and maybe partly due to the way the defenses are playing them. Mm-hmm. But, yes, I mean, if you put these guys in one-on-one situations with no help over the top, they've got to take advantage of it.
Now, Saturday, I was – praising the offense, and I mean, sure, they scored on 5 of their first 6 possessions. Auburn can't drop passes the way they did Saturday.
Yeah,
they had at least 4, maybe 5 passes that were dropped. I mean, fortunately, they were able to overcome that, and most of the times after the drop pass, they'd still be able to convert a first down and keep a drive alive.
Yeah,
I thought Saturday was a classic example of, and not to, because look, Jackson had a couple throws that he would have wanted back too.
He had one for sure. He had one almost, that was in a double or triple coverage.
Yeah, he almost threw what would have been Preston Howard's last play in football, right? If the hit had gotten there, if the hit from the South Alabama player had gotten where they wanted it to be. But no, I thought Jackson had that's one of those games where you have to remember that completion percentage does not equal quarterback accuracy.
No.
Because I thought that there were several
he was on
incompletions.
Target. Yeah.
including a couple to Preston, but also, I mean, and the
Horatio
one
had one.
I'll tell you what,
which
and
is very unusual.
And another, how about another miscommunication with Perry, which it feels like that's you know, unfortunately happening too often when Perry gets on the field, and I don't know how much of it was his fault. So that's another one though where I made the point on the Observer podcast. As excited as Auburn was for the Freeze Four, and you should have been to land those four guys out of high school, you are glad you went out and got Eric Singleton and Horatio Fields.
No, you're not kidding.
Because you would not want to only be relying on the development of those four guys right now. And the fact that Singleton and Fields have come out and made their presence felt like this is, I mean, and you know how long. How long do the Beatles stay together? You know, I don't know. Like, you know, we'll see. But and you know, with Cam Coleman, you know, it feels like he's the likeliest deep ball target because of his ball skills and some of that and his ability to.
He's the guy you throw it up, and if you're thinking you're going to put one up for grabs. It's hard.
Singleton's the one you think would argue that you don't think that
Eric Singleton couldn't beat somebody down.
It's about if it's about creating separation. I mean, look, we had the caller last week say this, and I think he's right. I mean, he said Waddle, which I don't necessarily agree with as far as the receiver that Singleton reminds you of, but Singleton does have like it's like Saban Bama receiver sort of route running and explosiveness, and it's good to have one of those on your side.
Oh yeah,
after seeing a couple of them, play for the other side for a while.
334-321-1390. We need to get to our final break of hour number one. Back with more of your phone calls right after this here on the Monday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Campbell, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the Drive. Final segment of hour number one here on this Monday. Let's get right back to the Drive hotline. And Dak is up next. Hey, Dak.
Hey, guys. How are y'all doing?
Pretty good.
Hey, bud.
Good. Glad to finally hear the show. We got an off week this week, so I'm able to listen and get a call in. But I have three concerns that really bother me. Number one, the punt return situation, man. We've got to find a guy that will catch the football on a consistent basis, man. It's going to end up getting us beat.
Yeah, I wonder. I wonder if we'll get back to Eric Singleton. I don't know. I mean, Malcolm looked like he was having trouble tracking the ball, and then Bryce sort of looked the same. Yeah. Now, we didn't make South Alabama punt enough to really find out that much on Saturday.
Right. But the couple of times, I mean, what bothers me is it was simple catches, too. Yeah. I mean, just fair catch the thing.
Yes.
And they were simple, you know, about 35, 40-yard punts that he's got to step up and catch the ball. And I know the two times that he let it hit the ground, luckily it bounced the other way instead of, you know, going on down the field for another 15 yards, which is what's going to happen in a crucial game. Eventually, and
what would you think, Dak? I know Dan is concerned about using Eric Singleton too much.
No, I think that's if I wonder if that's been the reason why they haven't used Singleton these couple of weeks. If they wanted to look for another answer because he's going to factor in so much time. Remember, how many rushing attempts did he have? Like on Saturday, I mean,
he had about a half dozen.
I wonder if that's why. But if you don't have another satisfactory option.
I mean, if he's a guy that can take it to the house, and I think he can, it'd be hard for me not to have him back, especially in big situations.
Guys, I'd rather have a guy fair catch it every time and then let the ball hit the ground and give up 10 and 15 yards.
Now, you're right about that. I mean, if it's going to come down to the ball's going to hit the ground and you're going to fair catch it, absolutely. I want somebody who's going to catch it.
Right. And then another concern of mine, and it's the same – it seems like it's the same the previous 2 years – is our lack of big play, quick hit plays down the field. It just blows my mind with the receivers that we have that against Ball State and South Alabama, we could not do that.
Yeah.
They haven't really taken shots. It's funny. Yeah. I mean, they did early on that 92-yard drive. They get to the 30, and it's like, let's toss it up and see if Cam pulls it down, and he did. Did they take another shot, really, in the whole game? I'm trying to remember.
No, I don't understand why when we do RPOs, we do a lot of them, and it's always a slant or a hitch. Why can't we do an RPO where we just throw the fade route? Because we do a terrible job of running our slants and hitch routes on the RPOs, and people, especially when we played last year against Oklahoma and Arkansas, they jumped them so quick, and it's we never throw deep off the RPO, and so that's another concern. And then I had a lot of free time this weekend, and so I looked at the stats. I went back to Peyton Thorne's first three games and compared them to this year. And, guys, it's identical. Mm-hmm. Identical first three games. And if you're just swapping out Cal with Baylor and then UMass with Ball State and Samford with South Alabama. And the exact percentage, mm-hmm. 60, one has 60%, the other one has 62% completion rate. And the yards was the same and the completions was the same.
What about turnovers?
Now, that tells me, what does that tell you? It's not necessarily the quarterback.
Yeah.
No, but Jackson's numbers should be better than they are because he had three or four drops Saturday.
You're absolutely right about that. But you know, I didn't go back and count out.
Yeah,
from 2 years
Peyton's drops.
Peyton
yeah,
drops
yeah. yeah, that's true.
But anyway, it's just if you go look, it's identical, and it tells a bigger picture to me.
No, I understand there may be a reason why you're not seeing him throw the ball downfield. I mean, if it's not there in the plan, then you're not going to see it. Great stuff, Dak. We've got to step aside. We've got our top of the hour break coming up. We're halfway done. Come on in and join us for hour number two of the Monday Drive.
Yeah. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. It is hour number two here on this Monday. Hope everybody doing well and had a good weekend. Auburn moving to 3-0, and now they won't be home for a few weeks. Got back-to-back road games and an open date before they come home to take on the Georgia Bulldogs. The question is, you know, what will the team's record be? I was asked earlier today. I mentioned I was on, you know, Dan and I sort of swap out being on with Doug Amos on the Max Roundtable on Mondays. And Doug today is asking me, and I'll ask you two guys. He goes, all right, if a genie, and he got into Barbara Eden, and it took a whole lot of time. But if a genie.
Doot, 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 doot,
there you go.
If a genie said.
I was more of a bewitched guy myself.
Came out of the bottle and said, all right, I will guarantee you one win over the next three games. Would you take it? And I said, no. No, okay. I wouldn't.
No, hold on.
I would.
Only one.
Only one. Guarantee so you guarantee you one win, and that's all over the next three
weeks. I think
if
Auburn comes out of this first six games with a 4-2 record, that is a very good first half.
I agree. I agree.
Okay. So
but then, I would feel much better if you're 4-1 going into the Georgia game. I don't want to lose both these road games. I think losing two road games and having an open date might not be good for the psyche of the team with Georgia coming in.
Yeah, maybe. But I still think this team, if it has to learn some lessons these next 2 weeks, if it suffers some tough road defeats, I think they can come back and have an incredible atmosphere at Jordan-Hare Stadium Saturday night, October 11th, something like that.
Yeah.
And I think they can beat a team like Georgia. I think it's just time for that to happen.
I mean, I'll tell you why the offer from the genie is tempting. I'll tell you why. Because if Auburn is 4-2 after the Georgia game, everything they want to do this season is still in front of them.
10 wins, still a possibility.
The SEC. You could potentially be in the SEC championship
college football
game at
6-2.
Like it's all there potentially at 4-2.
The reason I said no is I said I want to see what happens this week. If Auburn wins this week, I absolutely don't want to say give me losses for the next two games.
No, for sure. And I mean, and it would be like it's tempting to take the possibility of 0-3 off of the table.
Yeah.
in those three games, because you are talking about
road games. I'm tired of settling.
Okay,
Dan.
But I'm just saying road games against two teams that look like
they're
number 10
and number 11 right now,
and a home game against a Georgia team that
should be in the top three.
I don't know where, like, Bill,
Georgia should be ranked higher than LSU. I'm sorry, but
if you were a voter in the AP poll, Georgia would be number two or three. Would they be two behind Ohio State?
Yes, I would be. Yeah.
Yeah,
I would sure think so.
I think that's totally.
What has Penn State done that's more impressive than Georgia going to Knoxville?
What would happen if Penn State played Georgia on a neutral field?
Georgia would thump them.
Yeah, there's your answer right there.
The SEC to me, and it's still early, looks so much better than the Big Ten, right? This, especially 1 through 10-ish.
Oh, yeah.
You know? To me.
I mean, there's
and
so,
it's almost like Ohio State's right. a different. We're talking about a different.
Right.
Thing.
There's Ohio State, and then there's the yeah. rest. Well,
they may win it all or something. They may. And then I'll look dumb, but.
And I would entertain Oregon maybe being in that Ohio State mix.
Could be
as well. Like
they're in the Big Ten too. I still do not think of them as a Big Ten.
And they're out here vaporizing teams.
Yeah, they are.
Right?
Yeah, they are.
I mean, they're a 30.
But again, like I said, 35
point favorite against Oregon State on Saturday.
Yeah, I think like Brian said, I think there are 10 teams in the SEC that. Anytime could beat anybody.
Well, think about this. There are people right now arguing Miami as a top three team after beating Notre Dame and destroying South Florida. Yeah. Florida's a touchdown underdog at Miami on Saturday?
Man, Florida.
Yeah, well, like, Texas A&M goes to Notre Dame and beats them.
Yeah, no, I mean, people already thought, I mean, there were people arguing for Notre Dame before that, right? But the thought that a Florida team that is maybe not a top half of the SEC team right now, you know, could go to your top three ACC, top three Miami team and give them a real shot.
I heard this a little as I was coming in earlier today on the line that Jacob and Christian got a text from somebody who said, and I don't disagree with this, said, If you took Mississippi State and put the name Notre Dame on them, where would they be? They wouldn't, you know, Notre Dame's in the top 25. Mississippi State, if they were Notre Dame, they'd be top 10.
Yeah. Oh, I think you could argue for.
And there's an SEC team that's not ranked among the 12 teams that are in the coaches poll.
And keep in mind, they've got a winnable game next week against Northern Illinois, and then they've got Tennessee coming to Starkville.
Right.
So, like, that went over Arizona State. Like, that's going to be a cool story sort of bubbling under the surface until the Tennessee game is over.
Right.
Like, that could be a chance for them to you know, shock the world. It could also be, you know, sort of a bubble burst.
Here's the thing in the SEC. You've got one bad team, it looks like, in Kentucky. Who is going to finish 11th, 12th, 13th?
Somebody pretty good.
Yeah.
Somebody you probably don't want to play.
It's not you.
That's
right?
Exactly.
No.
Right.
No, you're open. Yeah. You're open some teams.
I'll tell you what. If Lenore Sellers stays out very long for South Carolina, they could finish in the bottom five.
They certainly could. Yeah. That's another one.
I think that's one that looks like they've got. And I think State is ultimately
and
going
Florida,
to
Florida just because their schedule is
if
so
Florida.
Crazy.
If Florida keeps losing, it's hard to imagine they're going to be able to keep things together.
I counted out Napier last year, and he proved me wrong.
Yeah.
But four of the next five games are against top 10 teams, two of them on the road, one of them at a neutral site. That's a tough stretch.
No, their schedule is brutal. Absolutely.
Arkansas has got a really tough stretch coming up as well, you know, including a visit from.
Oh, man, Arkansas had such a great shot.
Yeah.
They had a great shot. I'm thinking they were going in to win
Saturday. I thought this was that one had just Lane Kiffin rotten eggs all over it, right? Like that one just.
Yeah, you're wondering about. I mean, I wonder how good Ole Miss is. I mean, we talked how good is LSU? How good's Ole Miss?
You know what? For Lane Kiffin,
they're all good.
I think for Lane Kiffin to pull a quarterback I've never heard of, off of the
whoever he puts out there is going to put up numbers. That is no question.
For Lane Kiffin to decide after
where
what?
Did the guy played? Where did he come from?
Ferris State.
Okay,
Bill, you know,
is that in Maryland?
We watch a lot of Ferris. We watch
Bueller.
A lot of Ferris State. Yeah, it's in Paris. It's in the Ferris wheel.
The wheels? Are they the wheels?
Isn't it
in Maryland?
I think that's right. I want to say that's. But I don't know. I do not. You want to get? You want to play, Brian? Where's Ferris State? South Carolina. I'm gonna guess.
Oh, I have no idea.
All right, we're getting a
Delaware.
Ferris State. It is Michigan.
Oh, wow. Okay.
we were close.
There you go. Well,
yeah.
Trinidad.
Big Rapids. Not Grand Rapids, just Big Rapids.
I like that.
not the Grand.
Yeah, but the big ones.
Trinidad Chambliss comes off the bench for Ole Miss and goes 21 of 29.
Yeah,
runs
for 300 yards. Right?
Runs for 60 to 353.
Golly, man, he looked good. He
runs
did.
Runs for 62. And yeah, it's like, you know, and he's only a. He's a senior. He's the guy who came in for experience.
He's a guy that had dominated at his level, and that's a great pickup for Lane.
I mean, we've seen him do that before, right? Mm-hmm. Where he'll have a guy everybody thinks is the quarterback, but he'll go to the bench and find
I don't know. Austin Simmons may have lost his job.
I mean, Chambliss looked good, and
Simmons turned the ball over like crazy. First couple of games.
Well, he's good. You know what? They're going to need to figure that out with Tulane coming to town on Saturday. Yeah. It's a big game.
Yeah, because they got LSU next, don't they?
Couple big Power Five games coming up where mid major. Arkansas Tulane or Arkansas Memphis is on Saturday. I think that's at Memphis, and Memphis is they're in the mix. They're in the American to be the party crasher in the playoff. Tulane. They think I don't think the bubble has burst for South Florida.
I don't either. They just lose another number four team in the country.
Yeah, if they win the rest of their games, they'll probably get the spot. Yeah. You know, especially if they can win the conference. And then there's Tulane, who a lot of folks think is that team and could very well be and could very well make a statement this weekend against Ole Miss.
You know, we've talked about a bunch of SEC schools. How good is Texas? Texas still a top 10 team. They are. You talk about struggling offensively. They are. Arch is.
They're letting him hear it.
My good. Yeah, he gets booted home. Well, thing is, he starts off.
When did Austin, Texas turn into Philadelphia?
Starts off four for his first 15. When I saw those stats scrolling across, Arch Manning, 4 for 15for 50-something yards. Yeah. It's like, what?
Yeah, I mean, we pointed out
your
before.
Your preseason Heisman favorite.
well, before the season started.
I bought into the hype a little bit myself.
Nah, I didn't.
We pointed, although remember, he wasn't first team. It was Sellers that was the preseason first team.
Yeah, there you go.
First team. Yeah, we were thinking maybe Nussmeier. There's an interesting.
There's a lot of preseason quarterbacks that are.
Yeah, you've got Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly now apologizing for. I mean, I understand what he was saying after he was asked that. I think it was a legit question, and I understand his response. His response was,
"We won the dang game.
We won the game." But there's still a question as to but you got five interceptions and you scored 20 points. Yeah. So I mean, there is something not working offensively, but Garrett Nussmeier's not lighting it up either.
No, but we pointed out before the season, you look at Texas and Alabama and Georgia, and they were all in an era where so many teams want to go get the best, most proven transfer portal option at quarterback and roll with that. There were a lot of transfer portal quarterbacks in last year's playoff. Remember, and so it was kind of striking that. All of those teams felt very good about unproven in-house options.
Right.
And you're seeing mixed results through a couple of games, even considering the competition. Look, Stockton, I want to be careful. I think you can throw away the receipt.
I think he's a baller.
I hate to say it.
Yeah.
Throw the receipt away. They've got a good one.
I think so.
I think people were having fun.
He doesn't seem fazed by anything. I mean, he's pretty cool.
That was I've talked to somebody who was at that game who said the strip sack is one of the loudest moments they can remember at an SEC. Like that place was packed and rocking.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
yeah.
when they force a turnover up eight in the fourth quarter, they think they just won the game.
Yeah, I thought they probably had to.
They think they've beaten Georgia for the first time in 8 years, and those goalposts are coming down.
Yep.
And that's not the way it went, and Stockton's a big reason why. People were having fun thinking maybe Alabama had whiffed early in the season.
Yeah, Ty Simpson, the last two games, and I know it hasn't been against the greatest competition, but he's put up the most ridiculous numbers you've ever seen in the last two games. I mean, it was like two incompletions and 40 attempts. Over a stretch of two games, yeah. I mean, just
not quite ready to count them out.
You don't see guys doing that against air. I mean, it is phenomenal. We'll find out now. They've got an open date before they go to Athens.
That's going to be a great game.
Oh, you're not kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, a fun weekend. We'd love your thoughts, your concerns as Auburn getting ready to go to Norman, Oklahoma. Is the
is Georgia off this week, or does Georgia have
No, Georgia. Yeah, Georgia's off.
They're
too.
Both off.
Georgia and Alabama are both off.
Yeah, there are several moments in this schedule where one team has a bye week and the other one doesn't before they face off in these sort of games. Auburn plays Texas A&M.
Yeah, A&M's off this week.
A&M's off this week.
Yep.
Alabama goes to Georgia goes to Auburn. Off of Auburn's bye week, Georgia has a game mm-hmm. that day against Kentucky, and Alabama goes to Missouri, having not had a bye week yet, and it will be coming off of Missouri's bye week. So there are a couple of those. It's interesting that, neither Georgia or Alabama plays this week with those two teams playing one of the games of the year early on in Athens, Georgia.
Yeah, I don't think that's just accidental that they're both off this week.
No, that's some ABC main event stuff, and that's going to be what I mean. Kirby hasn't lost home conference games since 18.
Mm-hmm.
He's only lost one since the 2017 season started. Alabama, it would be really early in the season to have lost number two.
Yes, it
for
would.
A team that didn't make the playoff last year. Like that is a gigantic, I mean, Spurrier in the Swamp-esque kind of home streak mm-hmm. up against a team that really can't afford to suffer loss number two. Right
I could just see the SEC having these bounce backs, losses, bunch
of,
wins.
Bunch of 2-3 lost teams.
Coaster, yes.
I can absolutely see that.
Now,
one of them that probably won't is the other team that has an open date this week, and that's Kentucky. the Cats. They need that open date because here are their next.
Oh boy,
they come off the open date and they go to South Carolina, then they go to Georgia, then they've got Texas and Tennessee at home before they go to Auburn.
Yeah, I don't know what you're supposed to do with that. Like I mean it's
they did the, win throw in the white flag.
Did they win at Ole Miss last year? Or was it?
They did win at Ole Miss last year.
So maybe they've got something like that.
The good news is they don't have
the quarterback they had last year.
They are a consensus preseason top 10 men's basketball team.
There you go.
I think that you know what? That season that stretch is counting down the weeks till tip-off, Bill.
Yeah.
Like that stretch you just
right
mentioned
about
is
when does practice start?
and Auburn hoping to avoid a similar feeling over these next couple of weeks, playing some really big games. Yep. You know, the team, and I know we got to go to break. I mean, they're showing the highlights right there on the screen, Bill. I mean, how about anchor down?
Yeah,
right. I mean, they've got
more than just Diego Pavia, but I mean, they're a physical. They're a physical team on both sides of the ball.
Hey, I was listening to a national podcast about that, and they made a joke that somehow Vanderbilt actually got a taunting call against them. It's like, how often does that happen?
They
are good.
Nowadays, they're a confident, and they should be,
team. Yeah, they're
teams.
Walking the walk, and Pavia talk the talk in the summertime.
Yeah.
You see the stat that says first three. Did you see the stat? I mean, they've got – who is it? Utah State, who have they got? Georgia State and Utah State. They should be 5-0 going to Tuscaloosa. Did you see the last time they were 5-0? How about 1930?
Wow.
Yeah.
What do
y'all remember from that season the most?
It's too long ago.
Stock market crash, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it was a year after that, right? It was a year after the stock market.
Tough times,
crash.
Yeah.
I don't know, Hoover,
but
the Hoover
campaign. Yeah. Well, good for Vandy, though.
No, that's what
I mean. Hey, Clark Lee came in talking big, and they're doing it now.
I think it's in this era, you know, as transactional and as mercenary as all this can seem, and you got coaches. And look, if your coach is from nowhere near your school and he's winning, right, if it's a Dan Lanning situation or a Brian Kelly situation, that's great, too. But you're seeing some coaches, not just Kirby, like you're seeing some dudes at their alma maters. You're seeing Clark Lee. You're seeing Brent Key at Georgia Tech.
Yeah,
like it matters to these guys that they're making it work.
Brent Key was a Yellow Jacket.
He's a Tech alum himself. Like there are some dudes making it work at their home schools, and I think that's Georgia's a place that's accustomed to winning. Some of those other places haven't won all that much lately, and Vanderbilt has won all that much ever. Like so, it's really cool to see. And with Vandy, I mean, there's also the look, man. Pavia gives them, and watching them against South Carolina too, Bill. And it's strategic. It's just it's torturous at times. Vanderbilt is better than anyone I've maybe ever seen at deciding, you know what, we're gonna snap it at two or one.
Yep.
Every single time. Vanderbilt takes the play clock down inside of 5 seconds, no matter what, just to limit the number of snaps you get, just to shorten the game. They take it down. Like, it's an argument for a 30-second play clock or, like, a 25-second play clock. Watching Vanderbilt play, like, they take it down deliberately to – and it was – I mean, you had South Carolina people. I mean, I can't imagine what that – you know, watching that up close.
Oh, yeah.
In your building. And they're just – I mean, it – and you're right. It was – I mean, there was no defense. There was no offense. And Vanderbilt just – they took control of that game early and leaned on South Carolina until they broke in the second half. But Vanderbilt and Missouri, a couple of teams that I wouldn't be super eager to play anytime soon.
Bo's looking pretty good there at Missouri, isn't he? Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that's a Missouri team that I mean I'm with you. I think they could trounce South Carolina at home on Saturday. They've got is it South Carolina by Alabama?
South Carolina, one more.
Maybe Let's one see. More in there, but they've got a pretty manageable deal coming up.
Yeah,
before.
They got South Carolina, then UMass, and then open date Alabama.
Then open date Alabama all at home before they come to Auburn. Like, I think that's a team that
they go to Auburn and then to Vandy. Mm-hmm. That's their first two road games back to back.
I mean, there's some good football being played outside the top five, top six.
This conference, we're starting to get into it. They're going to be some crazy games that nobody would have thought as we head down the stretch. All right, we need to get to our first break of hour number two. Love to hear from you. Come on in and join us. Bill, Dan, Brian with Drew at the controls here on the Monday Drive.
The Drive with Bill. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 25 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Monday. Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews, and let's get back to The Drive hotline. And Spectre is next. Hey, Spectre, how you doing?
Hey, it sounds like we got all the cool kids here today. Well, we're missing one, though. I'm sure you'll call in later.
Well, it's good to hear you.
Yes. Well, this is the game we've been waiting for, fellas.
Yep. We'll find out. I mean, look, Auburn had to win that Baylor game, and now they've got the next two ball games. If Auburn can split, and look, I don't want to just take a loss. If Auburn can split the next two, they're really in good shape as they head to the middle of the season.
I think you can make the case, and look, I know that the Georgia game and the Alabama game were really big in Hugh Freeze's first season. I think there's a case to be made, Spectre, that because you've had the time to remake the roster and you feel good about what this team can do, the test at Oklahoma, it's maybe the biggest game Hugh Freeze has ever coached at Auburn because of what it could mean for.
I agree.
It's the first sort of stress test for this team.
All right, he's talked about this team. He feels he knows when a team should be able to compete and win, and he feels like this team can. All right, they did that at Baylor. Now let's see it here in the next two road games.
Well, we were fortunate enough, I think, to get the Baylor Bears coming out of hibernation, but. That was a good win for us. But this is the game that will let us know how the rest of our season is going to go. And if we can get on the field, control the tempo of the game, and hold them to less than 15 points like we did.
If you hold Oklahoma to less than 15, you're going to win the game. I really feel.
That's what I'm saying. If we hold them to less than 15 points.
That's a concern right now, though, to me. Spectre is.
Mateer down.
I mean, Mateer is such a dangerous quarterback with not just with his arm, but with his legs. And Auburn's just had, we saw it this past Saturday. Auburn's had trouble getting teams off the field. Got to get them. Can't let them just, you know, be able to control the clock the way that South Alabama did this past week.
Well, you know, I heard Coach mention that at halftime about the defense being kind of sluggish on the mm-hmm. field. So, you know, if that doesn't improve, yeah, we're going to be hurting.
No, and you know what, Spector? This is a game where you absolutely can't start slow. Because it feels like if you score a couple early punches, suddenly Oklahoma fans are feeling, you know, some of those ghosts that they've dealt with the last couple of years and the, you know, the hostility and the frustration with Venables and not winning as much. That can bubble to the surface if Auburn scores a few early. But if Oklahoma can make this a party and just roll downhill, that's exactly what they'll do. And it would be really disappointing for this game to turn out like, I mean, Auburn's had a couple of games.
What have you got against parties, Stan?
They've no. I love. You know what? You know what? It's no fun being the pinata. All right. I mean, I love a party. All right. But you know, it's not everyone at the party's having a great time. And yeah. So I think, you know, Auburn a couple of years ago went to Baton Rouge and they were. LSU was better at every position, yeah, right? In Freeze's rough. First year,
yeah.
That you don't. I mean, it would be really disappointing to have one of those happen these next.
Then
couple
they know
weeks.
How to party in Baton Rouge. There's no question about that.
They did that night.
Yeah, I say that we definitely have to control the tempo of the game. You know, I've always said that Malzahn and Hugh Freeze were good friends. That their coaching philosophy is pretty close together. Hugh Freeze needs to get back to running his NASCAR offense. And if we can control the tempo, like I'm telling you guys, we've got to control the tempo of the game. If we score, we've got to score fast. We've got to score again and again and again. Keep their offense off the field. That's all I got.
Got no problem with that.
Sounds like a plan.
Good hearing from you, Spector. 334-321-1390. Yeah, I mean – quite the challenge. I mean, and I feel like it could go, it could go so many different ways.
A lot of unknowns.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I feel like Auburn could go in there and Oklahoma scores early, controls it. You know, Auburn has another stinker on the road and comes back wondering exactly how good they are before they go to A&M next week.
It's interesting. Spector was talking about, Hugh Freeze needs to go up tempo. They need to go fast. I wonder if ball control could be some of
keep
the...
If you want to keep the ball away from Oklahoma, Auburn's done a good job of preparing itself to get first downs because they haven't been turning it over.
I wonder if, you know, if a little bit of the Vandy medicine, right?
That's the other thing. I also wouldn't be stunned to see what happened up in South Carolina. I mean, just depends on, you know, what happens early. I do agree with his fast start. Very important. All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Monday, 25 minutes away from 6 o'clock. Still plenty of time for you to join in if you'd like. Love to get your thoughts on anything going on over the past few days in the world of sports, looking ahead toward this, you know, this upcoming weekend as well.
How about some early terminations in college football?
Yeah. Your Bruins and the aforementioned Virginia Tech Hokies.
Neither job seems to be one that people are going to be clamoring for.
I know.
Right now.
You're right about that.
Everything we're saying about Kentucky is probably true about UCLA and the Big Ten.
I think
the thought that like it's a program that exists because the conference wants you to have a football team. But basketball is.
Yeah, they got to be counting the days down too.
More than any, and it's you know at least Kentucky isn't playing football 45 minutes from campus. You know, Kroger Field's right there. Right. You know, right there next to. Next to the campus, like it's I just think that's a really tough, like, unless there's a guy who really wants to be, you know, if John Gruden wants to coach Power Conference football as badly as he says he does.
Yeah, come on down.
Or, you know, or there's an FCS coach or something. But no, I think that's going to be a tough one because it's just they're not nearly as a football program. They're not nearly as well supported. They're not armed as heavily as some other schools in that conference.
Now, Virginia Tech has a really good fan base, but they don't have. I just don't think they have the monetary,
not at the moment,
support to be able to compete with the big guys.
There are some folks who think that program can be something of a sleeping giant. I know Marcello's really big on that, as like, you know, they're a program that the right coach
maybe he opens up his pockets. Somebody's got to open up their pockets more for
maybe they need the guy to motivate, right? A real,
I guess so.
Glad hander type.
So somebody come in and really be a great salesman.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's interesting though. A couple of big moves here. Week 3 of the season. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Let's get back to it, and Brett is up next. Hey, Brett.
Hey, guys. Tell me what y'all think y'all's opinion is on why is it that it appears Auburn's secondary not only hasn't gotten better from last year, it appears they've gotten worse, and you would think young players from last year, who were there, still there, would have at least improved a little, but dang sure not gotten worse.
Now, I think Brian last week, was it last week or the week before, had a great, great point that I think it looks more obvious every time I'm watching him. You know what I'm talking about?
Bug.
Yes.
Yep. I just having him back there for two years, having the experience to call the plays, to be the leader, to get everybody lined up right, I think Auburn's missing that right now.
I mean, I think that, you know, DJ Durkin doesn't run the simplest defense in the world. And I think young guys, we keep hearing, well, it's some misalignment, miscommunication. Yeah. I think they need somebody back there that doesn't even have to think. They know exactly where everybody should be when they see the offense and they're telling them where to be. It appears that there is some hesitation, and that, I think, is a reason why it looks like they may be sluggish. They may be a half step slow because they're thinking and not exactly sure where they're supposed to be.
Okay, but we've got one guy this is his third year starting, or at least he started some his freshman year.
Kahan?
And I've had some people tell me it's because they were in a zone, but I had a guy who's obviously not blazing fast. We're playing 4 yards off the ball. As soon as the ball snaps, he takes a hard four-step drop.
Yep.
Yeah.
And as soon as the guy goes 3 yards down and starts going in, he does not follow him. And if you say it's a zone, that's fine. But there's nobody in his zone.
Right.
And there's nobody coming his way. So that's like saying if you're in a zone defense in basketball and you're a forward on the left-hand side of the court underneath the goal and all four players other than the point guard over to the right, that you just stand right
in
there.
Your own place. No. Yeah, it's exactly. You're right. You're right. It sure has appeared that Auburn's really playing soft.
Yeah.
They're really playing soft and giving a lot. We've talked about opponents doing that to Auburn. Auburn seems to be doing that to the opponents.
I think there's a belief. I'm not going to disagree too much with what you're saying, Brad. I do think there's a belief in the recovery skills of a Kahan and a Jay Crawford, so that they can play soft and still make that play, or play aggressive and still like they think that those guys can you know, some of the athletic, the athleticism there can allow those guys to recover. And by and large.
Yeah, but it's tough when it's a quick five-yard slant or something.
By and large, I hadn't been as worried about the outside corners, as you'd. I mean, and maybe that's because Baylor didn't throw that way at all and Ball State doesn't have a forward passing game. And so you didn't see it tested as much as you did in the third game, and then in the third game you have Jay Crawford leave with an injury. You don't play Pleasant at all.
Right.
Did we ever hear what happened with Jay? Do you know, Brian?
Oh no, we did hear about that. So in the post game press conference, Hugh Freeze said that there was a knee to knee.
Contact with Jay Crawford, and they pulled him out.
Right. I think that was another one where it was precautionary, and he may have gone back in a different game. But you saw a lot of KLF. Yeah. in the second half, in the secondary. Some straighter,
a lot of him in the first half.
Some straighter, too, right? Like you saw those guys.
Straighter was in immediately.
Yeah, you saw those guys a lot more. Yeah. And so maybe some of that, maybe some of it's, you know, with the full allotment of players.
Well, I think all of us thought Caleb Harris was going to take another big step forward and be one of the best safeties in the league. But I think the thing we talked about with Jaron Thompson, I just think maybe he's put that on his shoulders to be that guy.
Yeah, that's tough. And tough on a sophomore.
It's just not quite all come together for him yet, and I think maybe that's affecting his play on the field a little bit. So, but I think all these things we're talking about are things that can be ironed out, worked out. Players can take the next step. We just don't know when that's going to happen. I think they've made some personnel mistakes with – maybe having guys that aren't good enough cover guys at
you think maybe Champ could nickel. Be a guy that could do that, you know, back there on the back end to try to get everybody.
Yeah, and of course when he got injured, that was another piece you're missing. And I think he'll be back this week.
Bill, I still say we're running too many people in and out back there. Too many people.
Interesting.
I understand somebody gets hurt. Yeah.
That's very interesting. You mentioned that last week, Brett, and Brian asked that question of Hugh Freeze
because
today.
I think the same thing a little bit on defense.
And tell Brett what Hugh Freeze said today.
He said he thinks, because he hadn't talked to DJ about this yet, that they're going to continue to do what they're doing now just to continue to build that depth. I still, to be honest, would be a little surprised that they don't crank that back just a little bit.
I think the bigger surprise would be, Brett, that I think you're going to see separation. And it's going to become pretty clear who needs to be out there and who doesn't. If that doesn't happen, I suppose it's a pretty good problem to have, unless the reason is that nobody's giving
none of them are good enough.
Well, that's great and all, but please, I'm not saying I should be a defensive coordinator, because I mean a junior high wouldn't even ask me to be the defensive coordinator. But I can see if somebody zone and somebody slants in. I mean, you should at least take a couple of steps toward them. I mean, even in basketball, it's the same thing, as I said. But, hey, last thing. I missed the first hour. What you talked about Jay Crawford. What's the status on Crawford and Singleton?
It sounds like from the players who – So the players who didn't play, let's start there. Damari didn't play. Pleasant didn't play.
Simmons played one snap.
One snap and got pulled out.
Champ Anthony
didn't play. I think the sense is all four of those guys could have gone in a bigger game, and I think they expect all four of those guys Saturday against Oklahoma.
And then Eric Singleton had a hip pointer, but it sounds like he's, you know, Hugh Freeze today said Amaris Williams is the biggest concern of anyone who got hurt.
I asked you specifically about Eric Singleton, and he said he's counting on Eric Singleton to have big games these next couple of weeks through the air and on the ground.
Yeah. So is everybody with Auburn.
Yeah. So I don't think that I think they feel like there's a dodged bullet there, and he can be a big factor this Saturday against Oklahoma. The guy who got hurt Saturday that they're concerned about sounds like Amaris. And I asked what the plan would be if Amaris couldn't go, because separated shoulders are gnarly, and that's a position too where you need all the joints working effectively.
Yeah. Wrists, you need all the leverage. I mean,
wrists, elbows, knees,
shoulders,
feet, ankles. You need all hips.
Head and shoulders.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I was trying to cover that too. Yeah,
you need all of it. And Amaris Williams
I got a 3-year-old grandson.
That's right.
Sounds like the shoulder could be a question for a couple of weeks. Jared Smith would be the next man up.
Thank goodness Auburn's got a Jared Smith behind Keldrick.
Yeah. Sounds like him and Chris Murray could get more playing time, and maybe even Zeke Walker moving out to the end. You know, could be the answer if they can't play Amaris.
Well, it is good that their top pass rusher is out of half. So
R. Mason Thomas, who repped them at media days and is one of the best pass rushers in the conference, got a targeting penalty against Temple and will miss the first half of the Auburn Oklahoma game by rule.
All right, y'all have a great evening. Thank you.
Good hearing from you, Brett.
Another reason why a slow start would be. Would be advantageous for Oklahoma. A slow start by Auburn would be a problem because Oklahoma gets a player like R. Mason Thomas back after halftime, and that's a guy that can rattle some cages and would love to land a sack or two to get those folks fired up.
All right, we'll get to our final break of the day. Still time for you to join in. 334-321-1390. We've got to get to Brian's Monday musings as well here in the final segment of the Monday Drive.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back in. Final segment of the Monday Drive. Bill and Dan joined by Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. And, of course, it's Monday, and each week we look forward to the Monday musings. I have not checked out today's. So let's Brian always plays stump the clowns here.
To start out, the thing I wrote about in my column are things we talked about today. I talked about the next three games and how if Auburn can win one, it would be a terrific start to the season. Of course, you want to win more if you can get one, right? But and also talked about the passing game and the vertical passing game and how that's an area that needs to improve for Auburn.
Well, you're going to need to be able to do that. There's going to be times. I mean, let's face it. In the first three games, there haven't been situations where like you're behind and you need to get a big, explosive play. That is something. I mean, explosive plays have been few and far between thus far this year.
All right, so we're going back 42 years.
42.
This is 1983.
Okay.
I think that's right. Yep.
Yeah.
And this is the release of the second best-selling album of 84, so it rolled over to the next year. That spent 160 weeks on the Billboard 200, had, I think, four top 10 hits, and another top 20 hit. And I can tell you that this musical journey began with sports.
Huey Lewis and the News.
There you go. Sports, the album.
Yeah,
right?
What a great, what a great album it is. Yeah.
What's on sports?
Heart and Soul, Heart of Rock and Roll, If This Is It.
If This Is It.
Walking a Thin Line. And what was the other one?
I Want a New Drug. Is that early?
I Want a New Drug.
Want a New Drug's on there as well. Oh, this is a great album. Sports is the name of the album.
Yep.
Saw them, and I'm so
glad. They
were
here in Auburn.
I didn't see him here.
Who ripped off? By the way,
I
missed
him here.
87
You know the Gin Blossoms played the Gouge.
I think they were here.
That was the show last Thursday.
You know,
Brian, a little trivia about Huey Lewis for you, Brian. What song?
It's supposed to be a documentary.
Ripped off. I Want a New Drug. And
Ray Parker Jr. Right.
Yeah, that's right.
Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters was. And then I believe, as the story goes, Huey Lewis told, like, he went into detail about what happened when they did, like, a VH1 Behind the Music about him, and he violated the confidentiality agreement that he signed in the lawsuit.
To get the settlement?
Yeah, he violated the settlement by telling the story to a documentary crew and had to pay some of the money back to Ray Parker Jr.
According to this, he was at Beard Eve's February 19th, 1987.
Oh, wow.
I would have been a student.
I was here. Wow. I don't know how I missed him.
Yeah,
We saw him over in Atlanta. Saw them over in Atlanta, a few years later. But glad to get to see him before he had all the problems that he's had. Hearing, and throat, then hearing. I mean, he basically can't. He's almost deaf now.
Yep. But incredible run there in the 80s. Had a string of number one hits.
Oh, man. And fun. I mean, just fun stuff.
All over MTV that period. So, yeah. One of the most interesting things about him is his father-in-law was a beat poet named Lou Welsh. And then as a young man, he stowed away and went over to Europe. And part of his time there, he didn't have any money, so he played the harmonica to make money. It's called busking. I mean, this is just like when he's a young person, he just goes over there and does it, right? So he tells you what kind of confidence he has in himself to do something like that.
And there's a lot of those stories that don't end with us knowing who they are.
No,
and,
you're right about that.
Yeah. It's great.
Yeah, that's true.
Great to have one that
he
does.
Made it. Yeah.
Wanted to ask Brian a couple of recruiting things. Just saw the on social media about Peyton Falzone. Who apparently
hurt himself.
Broken collarbone, but it's on the non-throwing. It's a non-throwing shoulder.
Yeah, and he sounds like he stayed in the game and had a pretty
unbelievable
good
first half.
Madness. Yeah. And also, we were just talking during the commercial break, nobody really comes to mind in your eyes, like if we were talking about the portal being open to VTech.
Something you don't think about when coaches, and we talked about it, while a lot of schools weren't going ahead and making coaching changes now, well, those two did. So those players – those schools can go in the portal over the next 30 days.
Portals open to both.
That doesn't mean that they have to transfer somewhere, but they can go ahead and make you know, they can be in the portal and be contacted by schools.
And I believe they can also wait.
And visit if they want.
I believe the normal portal window is also available to those players if they want to wait and see what happens, you know, with Virginia Tech and the new coach and reopen their recruitment after the season. But any players.
Can they go in both? Can he go? Can he go in the portal for 30 days and then go back in?
I would think. Yeah, I think that the portal.
Why not? Why not go ahead and go in the portal now and just start getting, you know, seeing what kind of feelers you get.
I think that would be my advice in general is you know, kick the tires and see what kind of offers you can get elsewhere before committing to anything. Mm-hmm. At all. But at the same time, if the portal is open to you after the season, maybe you just focus on football now and you do what you need to do after the season's over. I don't know, but we were asking if maybe anybody stood out as an Auburn target. Nobody necessarily jumps to mind.
And I haven't really looked at the team and what their needs are for next year as far as portaling goes.
I would think you're always looking at line of scrimmage,
offensive line. Yeah. They could lose.
They've got a few guys that this could be it for them on the offensive.
They got
line.
Two or three young guys I think that are going to step up. Ty Buster. Is that right?
Yeah. Cale Ellis.
Yeah.
Think about DeAndre Carter.
Senda and Ellis are both guys on the inside that they've been pretty excited about. Yeah.
But you feel like they'll probably go out and get one or two guys too. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm sure every athletic department, football office in the country has been checking those rosters out, and you know, seeing what kind of talent there might be.
Oh yeah, there's been some scouting going on.
Oh yeah, you know it, Brian. What's what all's going on? You mentioned you guys got together today, but I mean, it's big time now. Who's heading to Norman?
None of us, and I will be heading to Argo Saturday for my daughter's wedding.
So that's very understandable.
I'll be father of the bride.
An excused absence.
Yep. So I'm really excited about that, of course. Very, very excited about that. But we will have tons of coverage this week of everything. We go to practice tomorrow, get players after practice. Wednesday's SEC teleconference, and Thursday we get back with Freeze again. So I think we've already had, you know, 10 or more stories on our site today again. And there'll be plenty more coming out every day this week, leading up to the game and during the game.
Yeah, this is a huge one. I mean, as our callers have said, and we've talked about, again, it's not one where if you lose it, it's not the end of the world. But if you win it, my goodness, you are really feeling like this could be something.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the big one coming up. Yep. First big test. Well, second big test, I should say.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, they passed the first one.
Yep, they did.
This is like one of a big midterm here over the next three games.
That's right.
Brian, great stuff. Great to have you in.
Appreciate it.
And we will we'll see you around, and then look forward to seeing you next week.
Sounds good.
All right, that's going to do it for the Monday Drive.
Should have our usual conversation with Andy Burcham and Jake Crane tomorrow.
Looking forward to that. Yep, and we'll let you know what we see at practice tomorrow as well. But that's going to do it for the Monday edition of The Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.